member of a congregation I served complained that she did not have enough time. She had two full-time jobs. She had a 9-to-5 office job, and she was the sole household leader and caretaker of her children. She had three children, a very active life, and she was constantly complaining that she didn't have enough time, frustrated. We're talking about this in terms of coming to fellowship, worship on Sunday mornings, how difficult that was. So she had to do it all herself and get it all together. But she just felt she'd never had enough time for her children. And then one Sunday, she was reflecting on what had happened earlier, about 2 weeks before. Wednesday, getting all the kids together, getting everyone ready, go off to school, off to work. And she touched her 5-year-old child, her daughter, and realized that her child was burning up, very hot. And in that moment, suddenly, the only time she had was for that daughter, was to focus on her children, to make sure they were all safe, to make sure that her child was taken care of. She had all the time in the world for the rest of that week to give to that child. There are these moments where we think and we understand that there is enough time to do the things that really matter. And the more that we give, the more we have. Often we're thinking in terms of giving of money or giving of time that we have a very limited amount of each one. It's a limited resource, and if we give it away, then we have less. But if we give in the right spirit, if we give religiously, in the right context, for the right purpose, then we find that the more we give, the more we actually have. The greater our lives are, the bigger and fuller, the more of time we actually have, rather than a resource that must be spent away. It's full and powerful and good. I think I can read it without my... Oh, well, thank you. All right, I'll do it. Make sure I get the words right. See, normally I have a tablet, and on the tablet you can just do this, and the words get really big. Imagine, okay, so we have this book, Serving with Grace. My colleague Eric Wickstrom wrote it about approaching the work of a community, and he tells us to imagine. Imagine if the practical and administrative work of the church, meetings, planning, teaching, etc., was understood not as a necessary evil, but as an integral part of the mission of the church to spiritually nurture us. What if lay leadership was not a means to an end, but an end in itself? Could you experience the meeting room as a zendo, and the deliberations of a task force as a form of group prayer? Imagine the fellowship not as a place led by a few overly taxed people, but a community where leadership is a broadly shared ministry that members of the community undertake for the deep joy of doing it. That is the spirit of generosity. That is the spirit of grace. That is the spirit of abundance. Wickstrom uses terms borrowed from Christianity, grace and spirituality and spirit. All of those have a theology that, a longstanding Unitarian Universalist theology that implies something about the nature of God and the spirit of God. But in the title of this sermon, I was invoking a parallel concept, a similar concept called dana. If I were to spell it correctly, you'll see serving with, the way it's spelled now, it's serving with Dana. And we do have a member of this congregation, Dana Freehoff, who is a pleasure to serve with, to serve this congregation. She's implied in there. I was also thinking about Dana Greeley, who I'll tell you about later. But I was also thinking about the term dana. And dana, in a very literal sense, is just a noun that refers to the act of giving to someone, giving alms to the poor and the needy. But it also implies the spirit and the attitude of giving and giving spiritually, so that you're giving out of a sense of abundance and interconnection. It's a word that's used in Hindu teaching, in Buddhist teaching, in the Jain practice, in Sikh, by Sikhs, all use this word dana to refer to what I would call a spirit. A spirit is not a disembodied being. A spirit is a congealing and gathering together and connection of ideas and feelings and actions. So they all come together as a gestalt, as a whole. Something that moves and lives in and through and amongst and between living beings. And the spirit of generosity is one that makes very clear the interconnectedness of all human beings, the way in which we depend on one another, the interconnectedness of all living things, and to give out of that spirit, to live generously and abundantly is what I am encouraging you today, to be graceful and a source of abundant helpfulness. And one of the ways that Eric encourages us to think about, Reverend Rickston thinks about this, is to think of a meeting. Think of a meeting as a zendo. Zendo is a place where Buddhist monks have gone to practice the hard work of paying attention and waking up within a Zen practice. So he's saying that here's where you're doing the real work, in a meeting. I remember I heard a story once of a minister who at the beginning of a worship service and announcement time said, after this service, there's going to be a meeting of the board in the back of the worship hall. And then after the worship service, gathered with the board back there, and there was a total stranger there, someone he'd never met before. And the minister said, why are you here? And the guy said, well, I figured I'm as bored as the rest of you. It's a stereotype I hope you don't ever experience in worship here, right? It should never be boring. It should wake us up. But meeting, ministry is meetings. I often say this, ministry is meetings. And sometimes those meetings are in a living room or an afternoon, remembering a friend who has died. Maybe that meeting is in a hospital room, or people who had not been able to connect with one another are looking at the hard edge of pain and difficulty in life. I remember once when I had started a new congregation and I was living in Polesville. The previous minister who served that congregation had lived in a little town of Winslow. So I was in Polesville and I went to grocery shopping and I saw a member of my congregation there. And she was so surprised to see me and happy to see me. And we ended up having a conversation about some of the things that were starting in the fellowship. But she was on a committee and we talked a little bit about that committee work. Right there by the bananas, 69 cents a pound, right? We're right there at the banana. That's where the meeting was. And later she told me, that next Sunday, she told me, it was so amazing to realize that not only my religion, but my minister could be found anywhere, right? The idea is that all of life should reflect the goals and the hopes and the mission and the purpose of this congregation to nurture us spiritually, and that those meetings can happen anywhere where we can connect with one another. Reverend Eric talks about various ways in which we could take actual meetings and try to transform those, doing things like having a chalice lighting at the beginning. I've seen people do a chalice lighting, and after a while it just becomes a perfunctory thing that you do in order to get it over with so you can get to the real business of the meeting. But if you do it right, it reminds you of the connection between worship and worship in a meeting, worship in a service on a Sunday, and worship in a meeting of a few people together. Can have a moment of check-in, and check-in can be another way in which you nurture. He talked about the idea of having a vibes watcher, someone who's paying attention to the meeting, whose job is to pay attention to the spirit of the meeting, and were people engaged, were they antagonistic, was there fear, was there hope, was there just discourse or connection, all these things that nurture awareness. I remember a board meeting that I went to. The vice president of that congregation had been living with a secret for a while. She'd been sharing it with me. We'd been talking about it, but she had not told anyone else in the fellowship, which was that she was about to hit a divorce. Her husband was leaving her. It was really painful for her. And we got to this board meeting and we were just doing a check-in. Someone said, you know, I had a great week with my family, or, you know, I went on a trip, hiking trip. And then we got to her and she just blurted out, I'm going to be divorced. And she just started having to talk about that. People were asking questions. What happened? What's going on? They were asking. She was talking about what it meant to her, sharing her experiences. Other people began to share their experiences with divorce. They began to talk about what was going on and what it meant. 45 minutes we spent talking with her and processing and thinking and being a community, a loving and caring community to one another. And then the board president said, well, we're going to close this part, check in. And then we had to do the board meeting. It took us 35 minutes. It took us just barely over a half an hour to do a meeting that we'd scheduled for an hour and a half, because we had come together. That first part of the meeting meant that we were all of the same mind. We were all of the same spirit. We were all connected to one another. The spirit of dana, of generosity, was present. And so it was really easy to skip right over things that really weren't that important at the moment, to have clear, quick decisions and discussions. We knew what we were talking about, and the decisions were made fast, beautifully, well, and together in that spirit of dana. This same kind of spirit can be brought into any work that you do, especially work in a congregation, because this congregation, the whole reason we exist is to nurture one another's lives and to nurture those together. We can carry it out into the world and carry it out into other meetings. Anywhere can be part of the broadly shared ministry to nurture human character, to nurture peace, to nurture justice in human living, to fulfill our purpose, affirming the value and the usefulness of human beings, to do the things that we need to do and let go of those things that we don't need. I think of that Marie Kendo. Marie Kendo teaches people how to clean their houses. And she does that by saying, what is it that brings you joy? Look at this object. Does it bring you joy? If not, just let go of it. It's the same thing with work in the congregation. Work in the world. Does it bring you joy? Is it leading you towards some sort of sense of well-being? I mean, it may be difficult, it may be hard, it may have its bad edges, it may be something that you'd rather not do, but is there something about it that's leading you towards joy and fulfillment of purpose and life? Eric Wickstrom talks in his book about this. This holds up this phrase, no is as sacred as yes. So when we talk about people who love to do things, people who are good at doing things, and they get very involved, and then everyone else just lets go and lets them carry it, and they carry it for years and years. And so I often encourage leaders, who, especially someone who's been doing something, being in the same position for 3 or 4 years, to take a sabbatical and let someone else experience the same joy that you experience of trying to do this part, this life, this activity, this work, this carry, this responsibility within the congregation. And it may be hard, and they may not do it as well, and you may be uncomfortable, but try to see the joy. Try to encourage the connections. Try to let other people share in this experience, because that's what it's all about in a congregation. A long time ago, people used to say that the great thing about Unitarian Universalism is we didn't have creeds or doctrines. And that only was meaningful in the context of this hegemony of Protestant Christianity, which was all about belief. And said, well, you got to believe the right same things, and when we believe, then everything else is great. And we all know that, you know, it doesn't matter what you believe, it's how the beliefs change your action and shape who you are. It's what you do in the world that really matters. And so the real significant thing about a Unitarian Universalist congregation is not that you're free, because we all have been free. Anybody can believe whatever you want. I've known all sorts of Catholics who, despite all the doctrines and the vast tradition of Catholic doctrinal tradition, believe whatever they want. They understand, they interpret, they make their own interpretations. We've always been, all human beings can do that. The question is, can you do it in a community of people who are also acknowledging their freedom and who are sharing the results of their explorations and sharing what brings them joy and the differences, realizing the differences and bringing out those differences and finding ways to make connections between the differences? That's the real power of a religious community like this, where we are autonomous and yet connected, where we are free and yet in covenant, where we are all unique and different and yet seeking the commonalities and the ways in which our differences can come together and make each other stronger. That's the whole point of serving this community, is creating community, because it's one little way in which we can experience that beloved community that has no boundaries, the place where anyone serves and gives with generosity and kindness and builds peace in the world. Now, I chose the word Dana in this as part of the title of this sermon because of Dana Greeley. Dana Greeley was the last president of the American Unitarian Association, and he was the first president of the Unitarian Universalist Association of North America. And he was a person whose entire life was one of service. When he was a teenager, he joined clubs and led groups and got involved in both in school and at church, was on committees and going to meetings and organizing things, and always doing it with a spirit of kindness and helpfulness and the abundance of possibilities. He had been called into ministry when his sister died. He was an older teenager, getting close to becoming an adult, and his younger sister had a burst appendix and died of that. And it was the power of the religious community around him in that moment and the qualities of those people who were doing so many things, great things in the world, and yet took time to nurture this grieving teenager. And he understood what it meant to be in a community and always trying to create that community in the world, reaching out to people across the world. He worked with people from the Risho Kosakai in Japan, Buddhist sect, to create an international gathering of religious people all devoted to seeking peace. I'm going to be talking today and next week about peacemaking, because we're in a world in which peace seems further and further away, and national leaders and international leaders seem to be interested in fighting with one another instead of seeking that true ultimate community of togetherness. I hold up not only Dana Greeley, but that spirit of Dana, in part because it's how John Acheson lived. John Acheson was very involved in climate change issues. And I read a little memorial about him. Someone was talking about how someone asked him if he was really optimistic that we were going to turn things around. And he said, "I'm not optimistic at all. But I need to be hopeful." And it is to embody hopefulness that he was doing that work. It was with that spirit, abundance, a spirit of hopefulness, of possibilities, that he gave his time not only to that, but to so many other things, to sacred circles in the congregation, and always not with a sense that his work was, you know, like a nunsy, I'm the one with all the stuff that I can give to people. It was always a humble spirit of, what do you have? What can you share? How can I bring you in? Acknowledging that we all need to live with a spirit of abundance, of generosity, of dana.